All right, guys, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is a Free Agent Friday in which we will be talking about the Falcons' remaining cap space, as well as if Mike Davis is an upgrade over Todd Gurley.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's episode is a Free Agent Friday, where we're just sort of wrapping up some thoughts I have on free agency. We'll talk quite a bit about sort of the Falcons spending this offseason and whether or not they allocated some of their funds correctly, and maybe that will include more discussion of Lee Smith. And then we'll sort of get into sort of what the team's remaining needs are and whether or not this team is poised to compete this upcoming season, given some of those needs and how they may wind up addressing those needs. And then we'll get deeper into a conversation about Mike Davis and whether or not he's going to provide the significant upgrade to the running game that we're looking for. And if not, how will the Falcons make that significant upgrade to their running game? So with that being said, let's sort of get into the Falcons spending so far this offseason by starting off talking about how much cap space they have left. And based off of my estimation, they have about $250,000 in cap space. And that's thanks to an update on the structure of Mike Davis's contract, as previous reports seem to suggest that he was only going to count about $2 million against the cap. And now we've seen these sort of official details of his contract, and he's actually going to count $2.25 million against the Falcons cap this year, and then $3.25 million against the Falcons cap next year. Essentially, that's a one-year contract for Davis, where this year's salaries are fully guaranteed. And, you know, if he performs well, then he'll certainly make it to a second year in 2022. If he does not, then the Falcons will have the flexibility to move on and potentially try to upgrade that position. So it now indicates, with Davis making that amount of money and having that type of cap hit in 2021, it now means that Lee Smith is no longer the most expensive acquisition for the Falcons this offseason. That was going to be the case when we were assuming that Davis was only going to count $2 million against the salary cap. Now he's tied for Mike Davis, and basically that means that the most expensive acquisition that the Falcons will make this offseason is going to be their number one draft selection in terms of cap space. And Smith and Davis will be tied for second place. And I know some of you are like, Aaron, you got to stop with this Lee Smith stuff. But essentially, I want to explain why I've made such a big deal out of it. Part of it is, you know, I got to steer into the drama. But, you know, the main thing is my beef with the Lee Smith trade is not the Falcons traded a draft pick. I think that's where a lot of people get it twisted. And they say, like, why do you care this much about a seventh round pick? It's not about the draft pick. It's about the money. Right now you say, Aaron, you're the salary cap is a lie guy. And you're right. The salary cap is a lie. But the problem is that the Falcons believe in the lie and basically chose to free up only about $9 million in spending money for free agents this offseason, and essentially spent about 25% of that when you factor in cap space to a blocking tight end, with another 25% going to Mike Davis. So clearly, you know, if 50% of their spending was clearly directed towards improving the running game, that's an indicator of where sort of the Falcons' priorities lie. We'll wonder if that continues in the draft. Maybe we'll talk about that later. But, you know, given the situation that the Falcons have put themselves into, where money is tight, every penny kind of matters. And in a world where the Falcons would have had $15 or $20 million of spending room, like I initially predicted that I thought they would have and try to free up, you know, the amount of money that the Falcons are paying Lee Smith would be much, much less of an issue. But for me, it is an issue. And I think part of that is because I think the Falcons got duped by the Bills. You know, from listening to Lee Smith's opening press conference with the local media, you know, it sounded like how it came down to it. The Bills basically told him, you know, that they were moving on from him and told him that they would love to try to trade him to get something back for him. And he basically gave them a very short list of teams that he wanted to play for, which obviously included the Falcons. And then the Bills then made phone calls to those teams, and apparently the Falcons bit and made the trade. And, you know, to me, from my perspective, it was very clear that the Bills were going to cut Lee Smith, that he was their fourth string tight end at the start of last year, finished the season, you know, as their third string tight end, I guess, and was due a roster bonus, and they just weren't going to pay that. And I think the Falcons would have been smarter to just simply wait till the Bills made that cut and scooped up Smith on presumably a cheaper deal. And if you had signed him to a one-year max minimum deal, so basically a max minimum deal, Smith would have had a cap hit of about $987,500 this year, thus saving the Falcons about $1.26 million against this year's cap, as opposed to paying him the $2.25 from the trade. Now, $1.26 million is not a lot of money in the larger scheme of things, less than 1% of the salary cap. But for a team that's basically decided to just sign guys to one-year veteran minimum deals, you know, $1.26 million, thanks to the top 51 rule, would have allowed the team to potentially add six more guys on veteran minimum contracts to their roster. That's six more holes that the Falcons could have potentially plugged before the draft. And as we've heard Terry Fontenot say many times throughout this offseason, that the team wants to fill needs in free agency that so that they can embrace the best player available strategy in the draft. And when you look at this current roster, at least when I look at this current roster, I see about 12 or more holes that the Falcons should be looking to plug and or upgrade if this team is going to field a competitive roster this season. And that includes two spots are potential starters at left guard and strong safety. Then you have key backups like quarterback, like running back, like a dime safety, another safety. Then you have sort of true depth roles, which is an interior offensive lineman to sort of be a backup there at center and guard, to sort of essentially replace Justin McCray there, a backup nose tackle to potentially upgrade Deidre Sinnott behind Tyler Davidson, another 3-4 defensive end, you know, to replace Alan Bailey, and probably a backup inside linebacker that can fill the shoes of someone like a Leroy Reynolds. And then you have other depth positions where you don't necessarily need a guy right now because you have pieces already to get through this season, but you certainly would love to have a young, talented player that you could groom to potentially replace guys that are currently starters at those spots, and those include positions like wide receiver, tight end, edge rusher, and cornerback. So for me, it's really that third group of players, the interior offensive lineman, the back nose tackle, the 3-4 defensive end, the backup linebacker, that is where the money that you could have potentially saved by, you know, signing Lee Smith to a cheaper deal could have done wonders to addressing, because all of those spots are pretty much like back end day three needs where you're drafting guys just for, you need a body more so than anything else. And necessarily you're drafting a guy with the expectation that he's going to be a starter. And so I say all that, not because of, like, I'm hating on Lee Smith. Is Lee Smith a good player? Yes. You know, he's consistently been one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL over the past decade. Will he contribute to the Falcons? Yes. You know, assuming he makes a team. But for a team that chose to limit their cap space, you know, is he worth four or more roster spots? You know, not in my opinion. Not when there are other potential blocking tight ends that you could have had for potentially cheaper that could also, unlike Lee Smith, contribute in the passing game. So in a vacuum, I don't think the addition of Lee Smith is bad, but I just think when you're operating under a tight budget and you essentially made an impulse buy, you know, because you saw something shiny and colorful while you were waiting in line at the store. You know, it's basically, the analogy is you spent $5 on a thing that when you look at it at face value, you're like, okay, that's not that big a deal. But if you had just waited a day in this analogy, you know, you could have gotten it on sale for $2. There was a 60% off sale or whatever, you know, starting the next day. And when you have an overall budget, in this case of less than $20, that $3 in savings goes a long way. So that's kind of why I give, you know, the Lee Smith trade such a hard time, because I feel like it was just an unnecessary expenditure, an unnecessary waste of money that the Falcons didn't necessarily need to do. But, you know, will it wind up, you know, costing the Falcons six games this year? You know, I don't think so. But, like, it's not something that I think the Falcons, you know, put their best foot forward. But we'll sort of leave it at that, and we'll continue today's episode talking a little bit more about what the Falcons are going to do in the draft, and particularly whether or not this team can be competitive given all those holes I just outlined on the roster this upcoming season. But before we get there, speaking of trading for players like Lee Smith, I got to plug the NBA side of Locked On Podcast Network, where they're giving you all the action on the trade deadline. Whether you root for one team such as the Atlanta Hawks or you want to know how these trades change the landscape of the entire league and the playoff race, check out your favorite team's daily podcast, including the Locked On Hawks podcast hosted by Brad Rowland, or Locked On NBA. Find them both wherever you get your podcasts. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The NFL might be over, but NBA, NHL, NASCAR, and FCS college football are all in full swing, and Major League Baseball's opening day is right around the corner. And of course, BetOnline is the best place for March Madness, whether you're looking to earn back cash that you lost when your bracket got busted, or you're looking for a little bit of extra money as we inch towards the Final Four. And not just that, BetOnline is the place to cover awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Get real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine, because BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today at betonline.ag. Use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Again, sign up today at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So you guys know that I have you covered on all things Falcons, but who has you covered for the rest of sports? Of course, that's Peter Bukowski, the host of the Locked On Today podcast. He's got you covered with all the sports news that you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So the last point I want to note on Lee Smith is, it is notable to me. I see this pattern of, whether we're talking about Lee Smith, Mike Davis, Brandon Copeland, Eric Harris, Barkevius Mingo. Don't know whether Fabian Moreau fits into this paradigm yet, but all of these guys seemingly are high character, are high work ethic, guys that for the most part are journeymen that have worked through some adversity, are sort of older, hungrier players that's been around the block in this league for 7, 8, 9 or more years. And sort of, we've already heard from some of them, and they've already sort of commented on how their leadership within the locker room is going to be valuable to the young guys, which, you know, I think is another piece of the puzzle that's sort of positioning the Falcons and suggesting the Falcons will probably be looking to trade back in addition to all the needs I outlined earlier, where they have 9 picks and potentially 12 spots that they could wind up using some help on their roster for. And whether they trade back in round one, you know, I think that remains to be seen. Obviously, it takes two to tango. And that dance partner has to make it worthwhile for the Falcons to move back, and neither of which are known at this point in time. So I'm not going to automatically assume at this point that they're going to trade back, but I think it's probably the preferred plan. But it sort of seems to me that the plan for the foreseeable future is going to be for this team to build through the draft and have the holdovers in terms of those veterans. Their job is to make this team competitive in the short term. And that's what you're hearing from guys like Eric Harris and Lee Smith when they're talking about this team is not really rebuilding or whatnot. It's not like a full teardown. So I think what you're going to see is the Falcons are going to try to do their best to accumulate draft assets this year and next year. And you know, I saw on overthecap.com, they are right now projecting the Falcons to pick up 2 compensatory 6-round draft picks next year for losing Alex Mack and Keanu Neal. We'll see if that changes in the future. Right now, it doesn't seem likely that the Falcons are going to bring in someone that's going to cancel out somebody, but maybe more of their free agents winds up getting a lucrative deal, and so they get an additional pick in that regard. But we'll see. You know, if you factor in that the possibility of this team sort of potentially trading one of its top-end veterans, you know, over the next 12 months, you know, you're already looking at 8 picks next year, and potentially one or more on top of that if they are able to successfully trade some guys. So 9 picks this year so far, 9 picks next year, which I think that number could potentially grow. So it does seem like Terry Fontenot is indeed borrowing a page from Ozzie Newsome, which is accumulating draft picks. And, you know, Baltimore consistently, I think, averaged like 8 or 9 picks over the last decade per draft. And so the big question, I think, right now is going to be when this team is going to start phasing out veterans like the Matt Ryans and the Julio Joneses. Is that going to be next year in 2022? Is that going to be the year after? Is that going to be further down the road? Who knows at this point in time? But I think it does go back to what myself and I've heard others say throughout this offseason, is I think the answer to that question is kind of something that the Falcons are going to try to play by ear. And it's going to potentially depend very heavily on how this team performs this upcoming season. And the better they perform, the more likely it is that some of those veterans are going to be sticking around in 2022. The worse they perform, the less likely I think that is going to be the case. And while the Falcons' relatively low-key offseason has not necessarily inspired me to be super optimistic about their 2021 playoff hopes, I won't go as far as to say that this team is doomed to have another sort of top five finish next year in terms of winning, you know, three, four, five games or whatever the case may be. You know, I still think the Falcons have a fairly soft schedule. I am, however, concerned about the secondary because they didn't make the big upgrade in free agency that I was hoping for. So now I'm optimistic and expecting to see those upgrades come via the draft. And maybe we'll be borrowing from Todd Bowles and the 2019 Bucks, who used three out of their first four picks on defensive backs. Now, it may not be that extreme, but I kind of feel like we're at a point right now, unless the Falcons sign a veteran between now and the draft, they're going to have to draft two safeties. Now, there isn't a rich history of teams in the NFL drafting and starting two rookie safeties. Todd Bowles did it in 2017 as well, and with Jamal Adams and Marcus May. That's probably the best example I've seen of it working going back the last decade. Other teams have done it, but usually they have not gotten really good play out of those safeties. So that doesn't necessarily bode particularly well for the Falcons if that is what they wind up doing and having two rookies start for them at safety. But as I've said before, I don't know if the Falcons need to have an elite secondary to get by this year, given that they're not facing a who's who of quarterbacks and wide receivers this year in 2021 like they were in 2020. Last year, 11 of their 16 games were against teams with top 15 passing offenses, according to Football Outsiders' DVOA metric. Although we can argue that number was really 9, given that the two Saints games were against Taysom Hill, although the Falcons managed to make him look like a top 15 quarterback in those two games, much to our collective chagrin. But with that in mind, you know, if you assume the Saints are going to, from a passing standpoint, resemble more the Taysom Hill Saints from last year, as opposed to that top 15 offense that they were with Drew Brees, you know, you're really only talking about four games this year against Buffalo, Detroit, and two games against Tampa Bay, where you're facing an offense that, at least in 2020, was a top 15 passing game, according to DVOA. And, you know, I'm sure that some people will see this as a hot take. I'm certainly the Joe at Lockdown Bills will disagree with me on this one, but I do think Buffalo is probably a good candidate for some offensive regression this upcoming season. We can certainly discuss the potential regression that Detroit may have given the quarterback change they made from Matt Stafford to Jared Goff. And, you know, certainly at some point, Tom Brady's going to stop being Tom Brady. We'll see if that's 2021, but who knows? So I feel like you're not facing a who's who of high powered offenses. So the bar is relatively low. And basically I just think Dean Pease, in terms of the defense he has to build, is a bend but don't break unit, which is mostly what he's been at his best building over the years. He's not known for elite defenses, contrary to popular opinion, right? Not to say that he hasn't had some in his past, but that certainly over the last, you know, 5 or so years that he was a defensive coordinator was not necessarily his what he was known for. So I think when you look at this 2021 season, I think you're looking at the success mostly hinging on the offense and Arthur Smith and company getting that back on track. And, you know, I think that's definitely also a question mark, because the schedule is not nearly as soft when you look at the defenses the Falcons are going to face this year. Last year, we had 6 games against top 15 defenses, according to DVOA. This year, that number is going to be 9. You know, I think there's definitely more room for optimism on offense, whether you're considering the potential upgrade in play calling, the continued growth of the offensive line and development there, the potential that you're not only going to have more weapons at Matt Ryan's disposal to throw to, you know, especially if we're living in a reality where Kyle Pitts is the top pick, but also having a healthier Julio Jones with Matt Ryan and Hayden Hurst, you know, building that rapport, and also the running game potentially improving with Mike Davis as well as others. And that's what we're going to sort of continue to wrap up today's Locked On Falcons talking about on the podcast. You know, is Mike Davis due for that sort of breakout year, and is he a significant upgrade over what the Falcons have had in Todd Gurley this past year as well as Devontae Freeman the previous year? So we will get into that coming up on today's Locked On Falcons, but before we get there, it is March still, and you know that means March Madness is here, and it's time to find out which Built Bar flavor is the best. All month long, Built Bar is unveiling their bracket for the best flavor with daily matchups between the top flavors, and you can pick yours at BuiltBar.com. If you don't know, Built Bars are the best tasting protein bar on the market because they all taste just like a candy bar, and Built Bars just aren't tasty. They're healthy too, low in sugar and calories, high in protein and fiber. Build your own bracket or vote for your favorites by heading over to BuiltBar.com, and make sure you use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. Today's matchups features white chocolate birthday cake and cookie dough chunk. My goodness. And somehow Built Bar has managed to make those flavors healthy. So kudos to them. They are doing great work over there at Built Bar. But go ahead, pick your favorites by heading over to BuiltBar.com. And when you do, make sure you use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. So the NFL draft is slowly inching on the horizon. And you guys should check out the Locked On NFL Draft podcast hosted by Trevor Sikkema and Ben Solak, where they're giving not only their latest positional rankings, but they're also doing team-centric guest mocks coming up. So make sure you follow the Locked On NFL Draft podcast on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. So the question to wrap up today's show is Mike Davis an upgrade over Todd Gurley? And my answer is, I'm not sure. You know, I think when you look at the stats and the metrics, particularly at Pro Football Focus, you know, their numbers were kind of identical when you look at sort of elusiveness and, you know, breakaway runs and whatnot. Although Davis did break more tackles than Gurley did last year. Davis was basically top three last year in terms of Pro Football Focus's missed tackles forced metric when running the ball. But I'm not quite convinced that he's going to be able to sustain that level of production, because most guys don't. I mean, basically he was breaking more tackles than Derrick Henry. It's basically Nick Chubb and maybe Alvin Kamara that were better than him in that regard. So I don't know if that's sustainable, but we'll see. But maybe it is. And, you know, given more extended looks, you know, Davis got the chance to flourish last year, and with an even more extended look this year in Atlanta, he'll have more opportunities to flourish and put up comparable production in that arena. I certainly think Davis has more juice than Gurley does, but I don't necessarily know if it's going to translate in meaningful ways in terms of explosive runs. You're going to see a lot more of those 5, 6, 7, 8 yard runs with Mike Davis, similar to what we saw with Todd Gurley at his best, as opposed to those 30 yard runs and whatnot that you typically want in terms of the top end running backs, and certainly got early in Gurley's career. And I also noticed that when you look at other metrics like Football Outsiders, the Panthers were 13th last year in adjusted line yards, according to Football Outsiders, and 31st in running back yards. Now, that's Football Outsiders' way of trying to attribute a team's rushing success on what is on the offensive line. That's where the adjusted line yards comes from. And then the running backs comes from, you know, what the running backs in are doing on the second level and whatnot. So for comparison, you know, the Panthers were 13th in adjusted line yards. The Falcons were 26th. The Panthers were 31st in RB yards, but the Falcons were 29th, so slightly better. So to me, I think it boils down to, when I look at those two stats, it kind of boils down to, it's less a question about the running back. I think Davis is certainly a good running back and has the potential to be better than what Gurley provided last year. But I think really the question is going to be, will he get that opportunity if the offensive line doesn't substantially improve? So I think really the question is whether Davis is better than Gurley is somewhat irrelevant. It's really a question about, is the offensive line going to be significantly better? Now, I'm optimistic that the running blocking will improve, but given that we still have a current hole at left guard, you know, that optimism is very, very cautious. And again, I've talked about this previously on the pod, but, you know, I felt like the issue for the Falcons offensive line by and large has been on the interior of the offensive line. And you're now presumably going to be making a change at center, losing Alex Mack, presumably going to Matt Hennessy. You currently have a vacancy at left guard. Currently, we're penciling in Matt Gano there because we don't have another option other than Willie Wright. But who knows if that's going to be the case when week one gets around. And why the interior offensive line is a concern is it goes back to what we saw last year with Todd Gurley. You know, as you guys recall, particularly early in the season, you know, there was a lot of times where the offensive line was unable to get push up the middle, and that would prompt Gurley to try to bounce runs to the outside. Now, sometimes he was successful doing that. Other times he was not. And, you know, the evidence shows that one of the key changes that Arthur Smith will make is he's going to have a lot more reliance on the outside zone running scheme. So that should somewhat mitigate the interior offensive line's inability to get push. to a certain degree, but how much it mitigates it remains a concern. You know, I think running that outside zone scheme does definitely fit the Falcons' current offensive line personnel better. Gano has the athleticism to play really well in that scheme. Obviously, Hennessy fits really well in that scheme. They certainly have the talent up front already assembled, plus whatever they wind up adding in the draft. I think certainly they have the talent to make gains, and hopefully those gains from a talent standpoint will also be gained from a coaching standpoint, because you're hopefully making an upgrade there from going from Chris Morgan to Dwayne Ledford. So I do think the addition of Davis plus a potential upgrade at the running back position via the draft will help the Falcons in terms of making that upgrade at the running back position. But I do think the big question is going to be when it comes to the running game, and whether we're going to see significant improvement from that is going to rest on the offensive line. And without knowing who's going to start at left guard and what Hennessy's going to be for an entire season, should he be the starter, which I know there's a lot of talk and rumors that the Falcons are in the market to make a change at center and get somebody there to upgrade Hennessy. You know, I remain somewhat skeptical of that, but we'll see, you know. But without knowing the answers of who's going to be starting for the Falcons at those two spots, you know, 40% of the starting offensive line, you know, it's hard for me to get super excited about the Falcons' additions that they have made at running back already in Mike Davis and or will make for the remainder of the offseason via the draft. So, again, is Davis an upgrade over Gurley? Probably. But how substantial an upgrade that will be, I think, will depend on the play of the boys up front. So we'll see. And that's where we'll leave it, guys, today. And Monday, we will be back with a Monday mailbag as well as a mock draft Monday. And if you want to contribute to that mailbag, of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at Lockdown Falcons, on Facebook at Lockdown Falcons, or you can send an email to LockdownFalcons@mail.com. Appreciate it, guys. Have a great weekend. Until then.